is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Happy 9/11. Happy is the wrong word, I guess. Today is the day that is the anniversary of the U.S. overthrow of Mr. Allende, replaced by Mr. Pinochet in Chile. And it's also the anniversary of 17 Saudis flying airplanes and a few others, flying airplanes into the World Trade Center and into the Pentagon, and one of their planes being taken down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. It is an extraordinary anniversary. And there's just so much going on in so many different areas relative to this. On the line with us is Medea Benjamin, the co-founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange. Her latest book, Kingdom of the Unjust, Behind the U.S.-Saudi Connection. CodePink.org, of course, the website, globalexchange.org, and you can tweet her at Medea Benjamin. Medea, welcome back to the program.
Nice to be on with you.
I'm sorry?
I said nice to be on with you.
Oh, great. Thank you. You just came out with, CodePink just came out with a 39-page report titled War Profiteers, the U.S. War Machine, and the Arming of Repressive Regimes. Given that this is the 9/11 anniversary, could we start out with the connection between the Saudis and 9/11 and the American response to 9/11 and how it has changed our relationship with Saudi Arabia and our relationship with the Middle East in the, 17 years since then?
Yes, well, as your listeners might recall, 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. There were was a very large group of Saudis who were whisked away out of the United States back to Saudi Arabia before commercial planes were even flying after 9/11 attacks. Then despite the fact that the Saudis have been the perpetrators of this Wahhabist ideology, the U.S. has maintained a very close relationship with Saudi Arabia. The Obama administration had a very close relationship, selling over $100 billion in weapons to the Saudis. And then, of course, Trump came in and made that embrace even a more tightly knit one. And when the Trump administration announced its Muslim ban, it did not include Saudi Arabia, but included countries like Iran that had nothing to do with 9/11. So this insidious relationship the U.S. has with Saudi Arabia is an important one to recall on 9/11 and to understand that it's all about oil, profits, weapon sales, money, money, money.
Yeah, it certainly seems so. And we, you know, we got a lot of misinformation about 9/11. One of the most important, I think, was when Cindy Sheehan testified before Congress, before John Conyers' committee back in the day. And she had learned, and I guess we all had learned, it was not a secret, that before he was even running for president in 1999, when George Bush's family had hired Mickey Herskowitz to write or ghostwrite George W. Bush's autobiography, A Charge to Keep. Mickey Herskowitz had recorded about 100 hours of tape, and this is what Cindy Sheehan had to tell us about what we learned from that. And it's on the 360, Sean. No, it's, okay, let's see.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalists and longtime Bush family friend Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote.
So here we have, 2 years before 9/11, George W. Bush saying if he has an excuse to invade Iraq, he's going to do it. Did Iraq have anything at all to do with 9/11?
Well, Iraq had nothing at all to do with 9/11. It was a desire by the Project for a New American Centuries and the neocons to invade Iraq. This was a perfect excuse for it. And as we say in this report that we just put out, it's a tragic irony that 9/11 was really a boost to the weapons industry as well. So it was an invasion pre-determined preordained, and 9/11 was really the opening for such an invasion, with the disastrous results that we should really contemplate today when we think about where did 9/11 lead us, with the U.S. still involved in Afghanistan after, well, now almost 17 years. But what has happened? Oh, and in Afghanistan, we should know that even now the Taliban controls large swaths of Afghanistan, so certainly no wins there. And in Iraq, the terrible devastation that continues to be inflicted on the people of Iraq, with an unstable government, with the not only Al-Qaeda growing, but ISIS and the spread of ISIS throughout the region. So it is important to remember today that 9/11 was an excuse for the invasion of Iraq that has had such horrific consequences for the entire region.
We're talking to Medea Benjamin. Her book, Kingdom of the Unjust, is absolute must reading about Saudi Arabia. And Code Pink, which she co-founded, just put out this new 39-page report, War Profiteers, the U.S. War Machine. Medea, before we get to that, and I do want to get to that, before we do that, I'm curious your thoughts on what we should be most vigilant about if there was another 9/11-style attack or disaster, not necessarily the same form, airplanes hitting towers, but something that kills thousands of Americans in the name of a terrorist organization. With Donald Trump in office, what would you anticipate he might do and that we should be concerned about?
Well, certainly it would lead to a tremendous crackdown on our free speech rights, which we're already seeing in state after state, where they're implementing these terrible penalties for people who are activists, like environmental activists. We see this kind of backlash against people who are working around the Israel-Palestine issue. So say goodbye to our the free speech rights we have left, to the ability to choose places where we want to protest, because it will be protest pens. I would say rounding up with people who are dissenters. And then in terms of what it would mean for another excuse to invade abroad, I would think they would find a way to blame it on Iran, because we really are in a situation now where the Trump administration could use another war to distract from the domestic woes. And they have been focusing on Iran as the greatest state sponsor of terror, the greatest threat to the United States and the region. So I think some kind of attack would somehow be blamed on Iran and would be an excuse to start a war there.
Yeah, remarkable. Medea, tell us the main conclusions from this new report that Code Pink just put out.
So the report looks at the top five weapons manufacturers, which are Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, General Dynamics, and Boeing, and looks at how much of our tax dollars, in the case of the, quote, giveaway of weapons to countries like Israel and Egypt, and the sale of weapons in the case of Saudi Arabia, and what this has meant for the bottom line of the weapons industry. We took heart at the fact that one of the rare times that the mainstream media talked about who manufactures these weapons was on August 9th, after the horrendous attack in Yemen by a Saudi bombing of a school bus that left 40 children dead. And CNN put out a graphic that showed that the weapons came from Lockheed Martin, but they also put out a graphic that showed other killings of large numbers of civilians in Yemen and traced them to the weapons with, for example, Raytheon and General Dynamics. And we thought that was a very rare but good example. And we have to educate Americans that these weapons that are killing civilians, whether it's the ones being used by the Israelis to shoot down peaceful protesters in Gaza, or the ones that the Egyptians are using to gun down dissidents like they did in Rabah Square after the military coup, or the ones that the Saudis are using against the people of Yemen, these have an origin, and their origin are U.S. companies. And these companies are considered great patriotic companies, and their CEOs are asked to speak at big gatherings to show their civic duties and how they are such great citizens, like the woman who has broken the glass ceiling in the weapons industry, the CEO of Lockheed Martin, Marilyn Hewson, who is a mother and prides herself on all the things she does for children in the community. And we want to point out that the $20 million plus that she is making every year has blood on it, unlike the black ink in the bottom line for the profits of the company. Yeah. And how these companies' profits have skyrocketed thanks to the endless war. With the case of Lockheed Martin, for example, going from $31 billion to $41 billion to $51 billion last year, and how this is that we have to do what the Pope has done, which is call these companies merchants of death, to not remain silent in the face of how they are making their profits. And we attach it to a campaign called Divest from the War Machine, where we ask people to join us in doing just what the environmentalists have been doing, which is taking money out of the fossil fuel industry. We have to take our money out of the weapons industry.
Yeah, very well said. People can find the report, I'm assuming, at CodePink.org.
That's right.
Okay. Medea Benjamin, check out her book, Kingdom of the Unjust. CodePink.org is the website. And, of course, you can tweet her at Medea Benjamin. It's 18 minutes past the hour. Thank you, Medea.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Always great talking with you. It's 18 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of the news of the day. My thoughts on 9/11, your thoughts on 9/11, and more. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What are you most concerned Donald Trump might do if he had another 9/11 quote, opportunity, to paraphrase George Bush? And welcome back, Jared in Downington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jared, thanks for listening on the app. What's up?
Hello, Tom. And today is the anniversary of 9/11, which is, in my opinion, one of the darkest days in probably world history, along with December 7th, 1941, which began the military expansion of the U.S., the deaths of thousands and thousands of people, just alone, not even the deaths of people who died on the day, the deaths of people who would die in the system, in the events in Afghanistan.
Sure. What's your point, Jared?
My point is if we knew what was going to happen afterwards, would our if it still happened, what would we have done differently if it had happened again, if we had the foresight?
Well, that's what I'm trying to achieve right now by, you know, raising this topic and this question. George W. Bush had already decided that if he had an international crisis that was sufficient to allow him to lie us into a war with Iraq, he was going to take that opportunity, and 9/11 presented him with that opportunity. The Project for a New American Century, back in 98, during the Bill Clinton presidency, had said it's time to invade Iraq, and Jeb Bush signed that document along with Wolfowitz and a whole bunch of others who ended up in the Bush administration. And George had not, but his brother certainly had. And so we were kind of warned. We were forewarned what they were up to. I think what we're being forewarned about right now that they're up to is that they want to invade Iran. And what I think most Americans don't realize is that invading Iran is a whole different thing than invading Iraq. Iran is far more developed, far more sophisticated, far more advanced, far more powerful. They have a better and bigger military. They have extraordinary cyber capabilities, and strategically, unlike Iraq, Iraq could do very little to hurt the United States, which is why George W. Bush had to make up the lie that they were coming up with weapons of mass destruction that could be smuggled into New York City and set off. Iran, all they have to do is cut off the oil at the Straits of Hormuz, and the entire world economy, including ours, falls to its knees, and our economy gets in real bad shape real fast because there's so much debt out there. We've been talking about this for some time. So that's my guess, Jared, is that if there is an attack on the United States of any sort, that Bush will use, or that Trump will use this as an excuse to get us in a war with Iran. Your thoughts?
I also believe that they will enact martial law and elections will be suspended. And I believe pretty much any anti-war protesters will be rounded up.
Yeah, these are all the things that we worried that George W. Bush might do that he didn't do. He had a little more, respect for American institutions, and he had people around him who were rational. Trump has no respect for American institutions, and the people around him obviously are irrational or they wouldn't be around him. Jared, thank you for the call. I spot on. I share your concerns. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Christy Todd Whitman on a week or so after 9/11. This is she apologized for this the year before last, which I thought was in a way quite, good and noble of her. But this is what she had said, and she said it because, basically the Bushies, hey, we got this good thing going, all these people volunteering, it's an outpouring of American spirit, it makes George Bush look good, like he's a leader and everybody's coming behind him, and we don't want to, put a downer on this. And so Christy Todd Whitman comes out and says, this is out of my computer, Sean, and says this. It may take a minute for my computer to do what it's supposed to do. It's running insanely slowly today. And I don't...
Oh, here we go. Asbestos was in there, is in those buildings. Lead is in those buildings. There are the VOCs. However, the concentrations are such that they don't pose a health hazard. We're going to make sure everybody's safe.
It doesn't pose a health hazard. We're going to make sure everybody's safe. And as I said, she has now, just in the last 2 years, I believe, walked that back and apologized for it. But the reality is that over 10,000 people have died now. At least that's the best estimate. And several thousand, a couple of thousand, very clearly, cases of cancer and things as a result of volunteering to help out on 9/11. This is a major disaster for the United States and for the people of this country. And we really need to be, I think, having a conversation about how we deal with these kinds of disasters and that sort of thing. Gary in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
Good morning. My concern is that on August 6, 2001, presidential daily briefing was given to George Bush and Dick Cheney by Condoleezza Rice. It clearly laid out what was going to happen 35 days later.
Yep.
And nothing was done at any airport, to stop anybody who may be coming in.
Nothing was done, period. I talked with Sandy Berger on this program back, 10 years ago or more. Many, many years ago, and Sandy Berger was Condoleezza Rice's counterpart. He was Bill Clinton's national security advisor, and he and Al Gore, the vice president, and the president, Bill Clinton, all directly and personally, according to Sandy Berger on my program, he came on and he said, George W. Bush was told explicitly by Bill Clinton, Bin Laden is coming after us. I realize you Republicans, when I tried to throw three cruise missiles at him in Afghanistan and missed him by 25 minutes, I realize you guys ridiculed me and said I was trying to wag the dog to get out of the impeachment hearings, but he's coming. Al Gore told the exact same thing to Dick Cheney, and Sandy Berger told the exact same thing to Condi Rice, and they all chose to completely ignore it and essentially stand down, which brought about 9/11, which turned Bush's failed presidency, an illegitimate presidency, by the way, at that point, prior to 9/11, there was a lot of talk about, did Bush actually win in Florida? Turns out he didn't. and people knew it. I mean, you know, intuited it, that the Supreme Court had made him president. So, yeah, it's a mess. It's 27 minutes past the hour. We'll continue this conversation about 9/11 after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
So we've seen how one Republican has screwed this up really badly. How much damage could Trump do if he had a similar, quote, opportunity, quote George W. Bush? 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk media for the sane among us. Robin in Kingston, Washington. Hey, Robin, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'm ex-air traffic controller. I used to work up at Boston Center in Nashua, New Hampshire. My sense is that you've probably driven by it a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
And I serve as a surrogate whistleblower for air traffic controllers who were on duty on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And no names or anything like that. And have been in a couple of books here and there, and I don't want to discuss the particular DVD, video, and film and stuff like that. I really don't want to discuss the points about 9/11 because your conversation is broad-shouldered enough to keep everything thoughtful and open, and the truth is out there and people can find it. But I really want to talk about what is going on today and what we are talking about today as a society in comparison to what we stood up, I mean the members of the 9/11 Truth Community for World Peace, what we stood up for early, you know, just after 9/11. And we were criticized for seeking the truth, yet now everybody is seeking the truth. We mentioned that fascism is going to be on the way, disguised in patriotism and religiosity. And we were boo-booed, you know, we were poo-pooed for that, and now we're talking about that beautifully. I'm so excited. We were talking about the comparison to the rise of Hitler and Nazism, and now that is a subject that is being considered and talked about. We were criticized that we were saying that we were militarizing our society by militarizing local police forces, and that's going on. We said 9/11 is going to lead to perpetual wars, and we were criticized for that.
Yeah.
We said the First and Fourth Amendments would come under attack. That has happened. There's a great pushback on that. And probably the biggest thing that we said of all is that 9/11 was going to be used to create and continue never-ending wars, and that the big kahuna was that the event was allowed and to reshape our enemy from the USSR, which, you know, with Plan B was on the decline anyways.
It had already collapsed, actually, at that point in time.
What's that?
It had already collapsed at that point in time, a decade earlier.
Yes, it had, Tom. And so the Pentagon and our intelligence agency needed to create a new enemy, and it became Islam.
Yeah,
and the final two points I want to make is that a fellow colleague of yours, Peter Dale Scott, is responsible for one of these, and the rest of us are the 9/11 Truth for World Peace community have been very successful at getting the term false flag attacks well understood, talked about even in the oligarch media, and then Peter Dale Scott has done some brilliant work on the deep state.
Yeah.
And that
I think the important thing for us to, and Brad, thanks for keeping it at 30,000 feet. I think the important thing to note here is that it's not the attacks of 9/11 that provoked all this. It's Bush's response to it. It was the Republican administration's response to it. I really think that if Al Gore had been president, and certainly he was elected president in 2000, and thank you for the call, Robin. I really think if Al Gore had been president, our response probably would have been different, although Al Gore's vice president was Joe Lieberman, who was kind of, you know, philosophically and intellectually in the George W. Bush camp, a major war hawk. But in any case, it happened. And now we can look back and say, wait a minute. You know, we're ready for this the next time this kind of thing happens. Scott in Missoula, Montana. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Yes, sir. I'm a professional pilot, and I just kind of wanted to point out that after 9/11, literally the only civilian aircraft in the skies over this country were the Saudi corporate jets. taken the Saudis out of the United States.
And, right, with the permission of the Bush administration.
Exactly. And I mean, how does that even happen? You know, when you call up for a clearance, what do? Say, oh, I'm a Saudi citizen and I need to get out of here? I mean, how did that transpire?
Well, it was all members of the bin Laden family, and the Bush family is very, you know, historically very close to that family. And so I'm guessing that, you know, George W. Bush was right at the center of that.
Yeah, and just the absurdity that all of our 911 first responders that couldn't get health care because of the lack of funding, we should have had the Saudis at least pay for that, since most of the...
Well, there's a lawsuit to that effect right now, but I think it's been blocked in the courts. I know they had one minor victory with that, but I'm not sure where it's at right now. But yeah, excellent points all. Thank you, Scott. Well said. Roberta in Los Angeles, listening on KPFK. Hey, Roberta, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Well, I'm glad that other people have called in along these lines pertaining to 9/11. Glad to hear from the air traffic controller. You know, so much has come out. And I have to say, on the day, I saw it on television. And when the second plane hit the tower and when the towers went down, I knew it was a planned demolition. There was no mistaking it. Anyone with eyes knew it. And now, of course, there's architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. You know, when you said, well, if Al Gore had been president, Al Gore was never going to get to be president. It just wasn't going to be allowed. And in terms of the Bush administration being forewarned and doing nothing about it, the doing nothing about it was on purpose, because the plan for the new American century stated they needed a new Pearl Harbor. This was their
You're exactly right. I mean, the Bush administration, I mean, we can dispute whether it was a planned demolition or not. I'm still skeptical. In fact, I'm extremely skeptical about that. But I don't think it really matters at this point, lacking any proof. Yeah. What we do have proof of is that the Bush administration ignored warnings from Israel. They ignored warnings from the United Kingdom. They ignored warnings from Russia. They ignored warnings from France. They ignored warnings from their own intelligence service. George W. Bush ignored the warning of Bill Clinton. Dick Cheney ignored the warning of Al Gore. Condoleezza Rice ignored the warning of what's his name? Sandy Berger, the national security advisor. And they just, you know, and George Bush, and frankly, after that August 6th briefing, and this is what I think is the most damning timeline, is the CIA keeps saying to Bush, it's coming. And finally, you know, he's down in Crawford, Texas, having a couple of weeks into his 3 or 4 week summer vacation. And finally, the CIA just flipped out. They said, this is it. We've got to fly a guy down there to talk to him. So they fly a guy from Washington, D.C. on a private government jet into the nearest airport to Crawford, Texas. The guy goes to meet with George W. Bush. He presents a memo to him that says, Bin Laden determined to strike inside the United States. Bush says, I mean, literally says, you've covered your ass, now go home. And so the guy goes back to Washington, D.C., and Bush does one thing that George W. Bush does. He extends his vacation for another month. And then when the strike still hasn't happened, he's still afraid to go back to Washington, D.C., because he's been warned by the CIA that an attack on D.C. and New York is coming. And so instead of going back to D.C., he goes to Florida, where his brother is the governor. His brother locks down the entire state, puts it on a state of emergency, and George W. Bush is sitting in that classroom reading My Pet Goat, when the strike happens. And then we watch these long, painful 7 minutes of George W. Bush just sitting there going, holy crap, it's happened, it's worse than I expected. See, I think, and thank you for the call, Robert, I believe that George W. Bush thought that what was gonna happen was like a truck bomb. It was gonna be like a Tim McVeigh thing. It was gonna be something like that. And when 9/11 happened, I think that George W. Bush was shocked that it was as big as it was, and was very, very worried that America was going to find out that he had been warned repeatedly by people in his own intelligence community, by the previous administration, by a half a dozen other foreign countries' intelligence services, and he ignored all those warnings. Noah in Redlands, California. Hey, Noah, what's up? Or is it Nassau?
Yes. I'm just calling. I was a soldier in Afghanistan, and I used to teach counterinsurgency to the Afghan police. And one of the teaching tools that we used to use was called Situation Critical. It's a documentary by National Geographic that talks about the war. And one of the main opponents who tried to warn the U.S. about the 9/11 attacks was a guy by the name of Ahmad Shah Massoud, who was assassinated 2 days prior to 9/11 by some bin Laden operatives who were disguised as journalists, who were, you know.
Where was Massoud based? I'm recognizing that name.
He was in the Panjshir province. He's also called the Lion of Panjshir.
In Pakistan?
Afghanistan.
In Afghanistan, okay.
Yes, he was part of the Northern Alliance.
I see.
And his general under him was Rahim Dostum. And Dostum, I think, right now is the Secretary of Defense, I believe, of Afghanistan.
Yeah, and Dostum at that time, wasn't he also a major opium king?
No.
Okay.
No, he had nothing to do with that. He was in the northern part. The opium was in the south.
I see.
In the southern province, the Helmand province.
Right.
But in the northern province, near the Badakhshan province and all that stuff, is near the Chinese border. And one of the things about Afghanistan that the Chinese knows, and probably a lot of other operatives, is that they have a large supply of lithium. And that's where you can make the lithium batteries for the electric cars and all this other stuff. So that's one of the things that we used to teach, you know, to the Afghan police. And they didn't even know about it. They didn't even know about their own history.
Wow. That's remarkable. Nasoa, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for the heads up. That, you know, I've heard those names, and you know, but it's been a lot of years since this stuff was in the news. The history of 9/11 is in some ways complex and tangled, and in some ways very, very simple. You know, this was the result of actions that George Herbert Walker Bush took back when he went after Kuwait.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Or more correctly, back when he told Saddam Hussein, yeah, no problem if you take Kuwait, and then Hussein did, and then the war started, and then it got worse. We'll be back. And welcome back. Vince in New York City watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Vince, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm well. What's on your mind?
Good. I just really wanted to make an observation connecting what you're talking about with 9/11 and Bush, Cheney, and Condoleezza Rice and Brett Kavanaugh.
Yep.
During one of the days of his hearings, it was sort of interesting to see Condoleezza Rice positioned strategically right behind him. So all you saw was his face and her face.
Right.
And clearly there's, you know, the idea of her supporting him in that shot all day. So I just wanted to make that observation.
Okay, thank you. Very, very well made. And she was replacing the white power guy. And, you know, yesterday, I don't know if you saw it on my Twitter feed, but Roger Stone was in Portland somewhere in Washington State and was doing the OK sign, the white power sign, with a whole bunch of Proud Boys.
Hmm.
It's bizarre.
And the other thing about Condoleezza Rice was in the early days of this administration, she may have been promoting a book of hers, but she was on all of the cable TV news.
Right.
And I remember her telling everybody that we just needed to put the Russia thing behind us and it didn't matter.
Hmm. I guess that's now the official Republican line. Remarkable.
Right.
Vince, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Will, watching us on YouTube in Broomfields, Colorado. Hey, Will, what's up?
Hi, Tom. On this anniversary, what I think about most is people like my brother. On 9/11, my kid and I were scared to death that my brother, a Green Beret, is going to go and get killed because of this global war on terror. And he went over there. He wanted to be a soldier from the time he knew what a soldier was. And people like George W. Bush and Cheney, they cut the VA budget, they cut taxes, they made billionaires out of Eric Prince and Blackwater and Halliburton and people like my brother. Two tours in Afghanistan, one in Iraq, 30 days in a hospital for PTSD, a broken bone in his neck, and last 2 weeks ago, his heart gave out. My brother just died at the age of 50.
I'm so sorry.
Leaving a 10-year-old daughter, an 8-year-old daughter, and a widowed wife. And I just want to say, I was always afraid that 9/11 and the warmongers in the White House would kill him. And it just took him 17 years to do it.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Will. What was your brother's name?
Jeff.
Jeff.
28 years in the Army.
Yeah.
And they took his whole life.
I'm so sorry. This is, Will, thank you for the call. My condolences to you and your family. And whew, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. And this is, I mean, you know, look at how we respond when an American dies as a result of Bush's lies. Can you imagine how an Afghan or an Iraqi, an Afghani or an Iraqi respond? Because, you know, again, knowing that Bush lied, knowing that Iraq had nothing to do with the war, knowing that in Afghanistan, Mr. Mullah Omar had offered to arrest bin Laden and give him to the United States if we wouldn't attack the country, and George Bush said, no, I want to have a war, it's good for my presidency. Can you imagine how these people feel as well? This is just terrible. 10 minutes before the hour, Ivan in Chicago, listening on WCPT. Hey, Ivan, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Despite all our jingoistic hubris in Afghanistan, on 60 Minutes a month ago, we found out that our troops cannot walk outside their compound in Kabul because suicide bombers are waiting and blow themselves up to kill our guys.
Right.
The only way troops can travel is by helicopter. And just a week or two ago, one of them was shot down, killing the pilot. And after the Afghan president called for a ceasefire, our embassy compound in Kabul was attacked by a mortar fire, which killed dozens of Afghans. And how many Americans has not been reported, I don't think.
Right.
But here's the worst part, Tom. The Afghan troops we have trained are deserting and joining the Taliban, taking the weapons we have supplied with them. It's time to admit defeat, just like the British did 100 years ago and the Russians did in the 90s.
And just like we did in Vietnam.
Afghanistan.
And just like we did in Vietnam.
Just like Vietnam.
Yeah. Because these two wars that George W. Bush started, I mean, Vietnam did not last this long. Vietnam crossed two presidencies. These two wars are the longest wars in our history. Afghanistan is anyway, and Iraq soon will be. Well, I guess Iraq is number two to Afghanistan. And they're killing us, and it's time for us to walk away from these things. And weirdly enough, George W. Bush campaigned on this, getting us out of Iraq and Afghanistan. And
you mean Trump?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, Trump. I keep mixing these guys.
Yeah.
Anyhow, yeah, Trump campaigned on this, and I think people voted for him for that reason. You know, he said George W. Bush blew it with 9/11. We never should have invaded Iraq. I mean, Donald Trump said these things, and it caused people to go, oh yeah, this guy's a truth teller. I think I'll vote for him. It's pretty remarkable. Ivan, thank you. Oh, go ahead. You want
amazing, Tom?
What's that?
W has the guts to go on bike rides with veterans who have lost their legs and have PTSD, and draws pictures of them. And our veterans still support these Republicans.
I know. The Republicans, they have no shame, and Bush has no conscience.
I wish I'd go on a bike ride with them, I'd run them off a cliff.
No. Ivan, no threats, please. Ivan, thank you for the call. Daniel in Santa Ana, listening on KPFK. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Tom. First of all, I have a concept that is phenomenal. I really want you to address this. I've never heard it addressed. I am a KPFK shareholder, and I hope everybody listens to you and uses the expression shareholder because I own the stock of KPFK, and I'm glad that you're in it.
Thank you.
My concept, though, is I don't really think that Gore actually wanted to be president. And the reason why was because he picked the most uncharismatic person imaginable to be his running mate. Lieberman could carry no state. Lieberman brought nothing to the table, and he was the closest thing to a Republican that was going and could garner no actual support from anyone. And I think it's almost like when Kennedy ran against Carter, where I really don't think he wanted to be president. He just ran because people wanted him to. I honestly don't think that Gore wanted to be president and wanted your thoughts on that, because he could have picked anybody.
I think the mistake that Al Gore made was listening to neoconservative and bizarre, for lack of a better word, DLC consultants. And you know the somebody, or maybe he had a personal relationship with Joe Lieberman. But I agree with you that the Lieberman choice was a disaster, and that if Al Gore had picked somebody reasonable as his vice president instead of Lieberman, they would have had to suppress a lot more votes in Florida to have the Supreme Court steal the election on behalf of George W. Bush. I'll give you that. I'm totally with you. But I think that I talked with Al Gore after this all happened, and he was crushed. He was devastated by it. I am convinced that he actually did want to be president. I think that there's a long line of Democratic presidential wannabes whose hopes and aspirations were destroyed by the idiot consultants that these people continue to hire. Daniel, thank you for the call. Stephen in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on 1260 AM. Hey, Stephen.
Hello, Tom. Say, I just had a quick question, not 9/11 related, but the President Trump, did he have to ever go through any security clearances and credit checks on him? When I got a clearance to work at one of the national laboratories, I had to submit to FBI interviews. They checked my credit, what kind of lawful citizen, and I had to go through a lot of things, and it doesn't seem like they've ever done that for Trump, have they?
To the best of my knowledge, no. And the reason why is because he ran for president. He ran for elective office. I'm pretty certain that there is no background check required if you're going to run for the House of Representatives, for the Senate, or for the White House. And I think you can make a case that that's actually a good thing. Because if a government agency, a police agency of our government, could block someone from running for public office. Right now, you and me, you know, we're saying, well, you know, gee, it should, you know, they should hold him, they should have held him accountable for all the stupid things he's done. But the flip side of that is, what if that government agency has decided that they didn't want say, Bernie Sanders to run for president? All they'd have to do is just come out and say, you know, we don't think he can get a security clearance. We're not going to give him a security clearance. He went to Russia on his honeymoon back in the day, you know, and that's the end of his presidency, of his candidacy. I really think that, that's a vetting that needs to be done by the political opponents, which is, you know, obviously what Hillary Clinton was doing, getting the Steele dossier, among other things, which is an entirely appropriate thing. So, Stephen, that's my concern. Anytime, you know, it's just like people who say, well, you know, somebody should be the arbiter of fake news. No, the people should be, in my opinion.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.